So we are now January 28th, 2019, and tonight's topic is slavery and Western sensibilities. So I think the question is, I don't know if people have seen, is so strong that there is even some people who say, well, if the Torah sanctioned, you know, slavery, you know, it's so barbaric, it's so unethical, then it can speak to nothing. You know, I can throw out any, you know, halacha in the Torah, any rule, any principle of the Torah. But I said, well, you want me to do that? Well, look, but, you know, why should I listen to Torah? The Torah sanctions slavery. We know how wrong and abhorrent that is. So let's try to, we're going to try to go through certain of the sources. And, of course, we've had, in our tradition, very ethically sensitive rabbis, and see how they dealt with this question of slavery.
The Torah also tells you, if you hit your Eved Kanani,
right,
knock out his tooth,
right,
he's out of there,
right,
which is so unbelievable. If you think America 150 years ago, you could, you know, kill, you know,
right, right. So exactly. So one way, right. So one way, I guess, the very first way.
Even in the deep south. Courts, they can sue, they can... It wasn't the Hefker belt that you think it was.
Sure. So, but one way we're going to do, maybe the very first way, we'll see in the, you know, certain of the sources very early on, would be like, yes, the slavery that we're talking about is might not be the equivalent, it wasn't the equivalent of the slavery of the Deep South. So, again, we know with the models of that we have Eved Ivri in the Torah, but I'm not gonna, you know, and we also have Eved Kanani. So I want to deal with this question more even on the Eved Kanani and focus on that, because if that is the more morally reprehensible or questionable, and that type of slavery brings to mind more questions. So if we can answer that, then, of course, we can deal with an Eved Kanani, an indigent servant, someone who doesn't have any food to eat, any clothes to wear, and decides to, you know, to sell himself. So, you know, for food and lodging is much less problematic than, let's say, the Eved Kanani. So the first source, though, is it won't answer our questions, but it's the very last halacha in Hilchos Avadim for the Rambam, Perek Tes Halacha Chet. And after the first five words, where he says "Mutal Avod be'Eved Kanani b'farach," you can work a Eved Kanani hard. And b'farach usually also says where it's a type of work that you can't do for an Eved Ivri, which is like a types of work which with no benefit, just to you know have him do an action which you don't even need. You know, then you can do that for an Eved Kanani, but you can't do that for an Eved Ivri. So after he says you can do that, he says, but how should one, va'afal pi she'adin kach, midas chasidus, v'darchei chochma, she'u adam rachman v'rodev tzedek, v'lo yach, kaved yach, aved olo, you should not make his ol of an Eved Kanani so heavy. You should be have rachmanis on him, and you should do, and be rodev tzedek, lo, v'lo yetzer lo, you shouldn't distress him, cause him so much distress. V'achileo v'ashkeo mikol machol mikol mishta, you should feed him like you're fed. And v'chein lo yivazu b'yad v'lo b'dvarim, you should embarrass him with you know, with your hand or with your words. V'lo yaber alav tza'aka v'kas, you shouldn't be screaming at him and get so angry at him. Al yidaber imo b'nachas, but you should speak to him. Ella yidaber imo b'nachas, speak to him softly. V'ishma b'ta'anusov, and listen to his tanas, to listen to his either his suggestions, his complaints, his responses. Because we are, after all, Zereshel Avraham, and we are Rachmim Haim Al Hakol. We should have Rachmim on everyone, and that's the Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? She's only, that we should emulate Rachman Al Kol Ma'asav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Rachmim on all his creations, so we too should have Rachmim and treat our Eved Kanani in a respectful way. But again, that was, according to the Rambam, was Midas Chasidus. So let's look at, but what about the halacha? So let's see, so again, so the next few sources, we're going to say that the halacha we're going to see, and this was your first, you know, impression, that it would not, even an Eved Kanani is not the same as an Eved, as it was in slavery in America. So if you look at Besides that, you mentioned that he goes free, knocking out a tooth, or that's in the Torah, or an eye. The Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach, Perek Bet Halacha Yud, says, Echad ha-horeg es Yisrael, o ha-horeg eved knani, ha-rezin neragalav, im ha-horeg b'shgaga gola. If you kill your eved knani, it's a capital offense. You're chayiv misa. If you kill him b'shogeg, you have to go to an ir miklat. So that's really different than I think how things were, in the South.
Not in the late 1800s. Not in the mid 1800s already.
Okay.
You couldn't just wantonly kill blacks.
Your property. I don't know.
You had to provide them. You had to feed them. Mm-hmm. Federal laws. You had to provide them. You had to feed them.
Okay.
You couldn't
okay.
just raise them. And
okay, but I think they, you know, but they branded yeah. them. They go free if you under the halach. If you cut off a pinky toe. You know, they go free. I don't think that was the, the law. And yeah, right. I think right. And would you actually kill
You could kind of punish. You could just want them for no reason. Okay. To kill a slave in the deep south, even in the.
Okay. And would they? And the owner go to? Has there ever been a case where the owner was killed? You know, I'm not sure. Okay. So,
maybe
but then
he has to sneeze or something before we get to kill them. Good reason.
Right. So then the third source, again, I practically says, this is a Gemara in Nida, Mem Zayin, says, Olam Bam Tavodu, quotes that Pasuk, and even though we know from that Pasuk that there is then going to be an Isser Aseh to free an Eved Kanani, but it says, even from the same words, La Avdon Nasatir Velo Levusha. So again, just we mentioned, you know, just, and these are the halachas, not the Midas Chasidus of the, of the Rambam. Also, so those were the more some of the physical needs of the slave. The next halachos bring down even the spiritual needs of the slave. If you sold, this is the Rambam Hilchos Avadim Perachet, that if you sold your eved Knani to a non-Jew, then the eved goes free. And or even if you sold it, the next halach, if you sold it to a Jew in Chutz La'aretz, the eved Knani would go free. So these are again. So that's. But even with all those halachos, there is still the whole notion of slavery is difficult to our Western sensibilities.
We have a lawyer here. We have. I'm missing the logic here. He's a Nafri. I sell my Evet to Nafri, he goes free. Yeah. He had a bad deal there, didn't
right,
he?
Right, right, right. So it says that you have to, you might have to you have to, actually in that time, you have to try to compensate him up to 10 times the amount to try to get him to go free. I didn't finish the halacha, but you do have to compensate, and if you have to do your best, to buy him back and make him, and let him go free. So, the first, position that I want to or answer that I wanted to bring down would be the how Rav Hirsch and Rav Uziel dealt with this tension between the concept of Eved Knani in the Torah and our sense of that we should not make any free person a slave. So Rav Hirsch, this answer is gonna what I'm gonna do is gonna take Eved Knani and severely limit the concept of of when it's permissible, to make someone an Eved Knani or to have an Eved Knani, and in that and the rest will just be almost like for the benefit of the Eved Knani. So, what Rav Hirsch is going to say is, it's true. You were never able to, according to halacha, take a person who's a free person and make him into a slave. That you weren't allowed to do. The only thing Rav Hirsch and Rav Uziel say is that you were allowed to do, halacha allows one to do, is that if someone was already a slave, right, then you were allowed to purchase that slave, right, and let him then become a Eved Knani under with Jewish ownership. But you were never allowed to take a non-Jewish free man, and enslave him. That's what Rav Hirsch and Rav Uziel want to say. A lot of these sources, a little bit more than used to, are going to be in English. They are from a source 13, where it was a Torah Mada journal in 2012, had an article on this topic. So it was, that's where these are taken from. But it's quoted from...
Is that
catches the Svara.
He wants to say that there's nowhere in the Torah, I guess, or in the Gemara, or in the Rambam, that says that you are allowed to take, and he would reinterpret those psukim, and we'll look at certain things where halacha seems to be against this halacha. He's going to quote, the article quoted three sources, and I brought them down, that maybe question this halacha, but they would always reinterpret that. It always means if you're going to buy an Eved Kanani from the outlying nations, these means that they were already slaves. You weren't buying someone a free man and making them a slave. You were just buying them a slave. And then you can imagine that if they're already a slave, that it's better to be a slave under the halachic system, where again you can't treat them so terribly in terms of knocking out a tooth or an eye or kill them or bush or things like that, then as opposed to letting them stay in the terrible conditions of a slave with a non-Jewish slave owner.
As a big fan of Rav Shimshon and Rav Hirsch.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe, oops, the Gemara forgot to tell us this little point. You know, it goes into every minute detail. Everyone forgot to tell us that an Eved Kanani,
right,
you only buy if he's already an Eved.
Right.
It's
but
a
he
little
did,
bit strange.
But there was no source. On the other hand, I guess, on the other hand, there's no source. If there's no source that says you could do it. So he said. So let's read what Rav Hirsch says. This in Shmos 12:44. The consideration of certain circumstances is necessary correctly to understand the fact that the Torah presupposes and allows the possession or purchase of slaves from abroad to a nation itself just released from slavery. So Rav Hirsch begins by saying the Jews just left Mitzrayim. The Jews just left slavery, and then in this parsha we're talking about the Korban Pesach, and in the Korban Pesach it says slaves, Eved Kananim, who've already had a milah, you know, we know an Eved Kanani, we should also say, an Eved Kanani, we are tovel an Eved Kanani, and we do milah on an Eved Kanani, and they're chayiv in mitzvos, and the chayiv in mitzvos, like a woman, so they have to keep Pesach, they have to keep Shabbos. It's just a handful of, you know, six or seven or mitzvot saseishas man grama that they're putter for. But they're chayiv in over 600 mitzvot.
It's a conversion process, because when you were shachrer,
and then when shachrer and Eved, they can become a complete Jew, a complete Ger Tzedek. Correct.
Which
so
revert to being a total non-Jew.
So
600 something.
Right. So not no. The
okay.
No.
If
you have a money, if you bought the Eved Kanani, the one of the things is you can't sell them back to a non-Jew. But if they if over that first month, that first year, he refuses to do Mila, he refuses to do the Tefillah, then you have to. You can't hold on to it. You sell them back to the non-Jew. But once they, I think they've already reached that stage, right? To the Eved Kanani and the Chayiv in over 600 mitzvahs, they don't go back. So,
conversion on a person.
Well, he has to accept it. He has to accept it.
You can't keep him as an Eved.
Right. So he has to accept to be Mo'el and Tovel, the shame. There was one, if at the very beginning, I think the halacha is, again, I didn't go through all, I was looking more for the ethical sensibilities and how, and that was the direction of the Shia. So I don't know all the halachos, but if at the very beginning the Eved stipulated that I don't want to be Mo'el and Tovel, but I'm becoming Eved Kanani, but not being Mila Tefillah, then he can stay with you with that, in that capacity. But again, it was with his own input at the beginning. I'm not sure of all the his choice, and I'm not sure, right, of all the halachos. So the but he says, look, so why right away the Jews left? They were slaves. So and all of a sudden we have a parsha of Korban Pesach, and we say the Eved, the Eved can eat the Korban Pesach. Like, what's how are we having Avdus in a holiday that's celebrating freedom? So you should know, he says. He continues, no Jew can make any other human being into a slave. He can only acquire by purchase people who, by then universally accepted international law, were already slaves. So, and then he says, once they were a slave, then of course, by this ran into the property of a Jew, was the one that only salvation for anybody who, according to prevailing laws of the nation, was stamped of a slave. Because we know how completely unprotected and liable to the most inhumane treatment was the slave. So of course, that would be Lutovat, the slave, but we could not make someone into a slave. So that really helps with this question, because it so severely limits that we couldn't make anybody a slave. We could only take someone who was a slave and bring him under our rules. On the hand, you can argue with it, and Rav Uziel says the same thing, you know, in source 7. So you can, you know, you might argue and say, well, you know, why be involved, you know, isn't it by you buying a slave, aren't you facilitating the slave trade? So just like you couldn't buy stolen goods, you don't want to facilitate. So the article gave the answer, look, the goods are, right, you don't want to facilitate it, you don't want to understand it. But here you have an Eved who's suffering right now by being an Eved for a non-Jew, and there is suffering going on, and if we can better the situation to bring him into Jewish ownership, that was more of a concern, and maybe, you know, that will override, you know, the possibility of being involved in the slave trade to make it to increase it when you already have someone who's a slave and is suffering in front of you, and you can bring them into some more humane halachos. That was how Rav Hirsch dealt with the one way. We're going to see another Rav Hirsch, which takes a slightly different, which takes even a more broad approach, and this will be our second approach, where, no, it's not, even to take any non-Jew and make him into a slave, the institution of Avdus could actually be beneficial. And that will go on to our next... before we do that, you wanted to mention maybe questions on this halacha. Is it really true? Does everyone accept, you know, that you really couldn't make someone who was free into a slave? So one case they wanted to bring was, look in Source Eis, Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, Simin Reish Samech Zayin Sif Tet, says that if you're on the next page, you take an Source Eis, an Oved Kochavim, here, Shemocher, it's Atzmal Yisrael, Kono Gufo Miyad. So on one hand, here, you took a free person and you made him into a slave. But the it's not so much of a question, I don't think, because here he's doing it Me'atzmo. So it's not, I don't think it bothers me that much. The next halacha, again, I don't think is universally accepted, but I don't understand it completely, because it says Yisrael Shatakof Akum. So I don't know exactly what Akum Katan, what exactly that case is. The next case is, Oh Matzah Tinok Akum. Look, you find a little baby Gentile at your doorstep. So the Rambam says, you have the right, you can place the baby in a mikvah to be a Ger Toshav. You know, a Ger Toshav can live in Eretz Yisrael, and he accepts monotheism, and he accepts upon himself the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, so he can be at that stage. Or you can be Tovel the baby to be an Eved Knani, or you can actually be Tovel the baby to be a Ger Tzedek, to be 100% Jew. So, but there is a sense there that you took a baby that was not a slave, and then you can make him into an Eved Knani, but again, you're dealing with someone who's just a helpless little baby, and you're taking on all the responsibility. So I guess somehow you have more of, according to the Rambam, a right to say how this baby's going to be raised, and you have more of a choice. The last one in Source 10 was the one about, what about, this is interesting, he gave the difference between an Eved Ivri that was sold because he was a Ganav, or an Eved Ivri was sold because he was very poor. But he brings down halacha, that if an Eved Ivri was sold because he was a Ganav, then he, the owner, has the right to tell that Eved Ivri to have relations with his Shifcha Kananis and to make more baby that will be slaves, that will be Avadim. you're making more slaves. Okay, but it was never free. It doesn't really violate the principle that you had a free person and who became a slave, which according to Rav Hirsch says the Torah and Halacha does not allow. Okay, so the second way to deal with this question is going to be the Netziv, and will be Rav Dessler and even Rav Cook will say that no, it's even without this, you're allowed to take a non-Jew and make them in an Eved, and still it will be beneficial. The Netziv was in Source 12, but he's commenting on Source 11, the Pasuk, that says, V'abdecha v'amatcha asher yulach me'eta goyim, right? Asher sivosehem, you have non-Jews that are surrounding you. Mehem tiknu, you can buy from them eved va'amad. You can buy from them eved kananim. So he wants to say that, I guess the Rav Hirsch said, oh, only buy from them people who are already eved kananim. I don't think the Netziv is necessarily limiting that way. And he's actually saying that it's, while Rav Hirsch argued, Rav Hirsch says it would be immoral. It's not proper. It's not letovasha, the non-Jew who is free to become an Eved Kanani. He agreed with that. He said, Rav Dessler says, no, any non-Jew, any Akum who wants to then, who becomes an Eved Kanani, is actually, would be beneficial to him. He says, mitzvah, this is the Netziv in Vayikra Chafei Mem Dalid, it says, mitzvah liknos, why is it, it's a mitzvah liknos, ke lehotzeh me'ov de kochavim. The to take, I think he's focused more on the mitzvahs. To take an Akum, who is, you know, is not showing any mitzvos, and to bring them into over 600 mitzvos, that in itself is letovat the akum, and it was even a mitzvah to do that. He said, however, you wouldn't do that to a ger toshav. A ger toshav, imkein toshav, asman kvar einin ovden avodas kochavim. They already believe in monotheism, and even though as a ger toshav they can eat treif, right? And, why don't you, and if you brought them into being an Eved Kanani, then that would even, increase their mitzvahs, and they'll no longer eat, you know, they'd have to keep kosher, right? Like, and keep all the mitzvahs like a woman would do. Still, we don't want to say that would not be a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to take someone who is an Ovid Kochavim and make them under the mitzvos, that would be good. To take someone who's already Shomer Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach and try to bring them more, that goes against the Gemara in Yevamos, he says, where She'ein Shum Mitzvah Lasas Gerim. Judaism doesn't want to, force people to become Gerim or make people into, Gerim. So that would not be a mitzvah to do. But he wants to say that, just to... let's read, just to bring someone who was not Shomer Mitzvahs into over 600 Mitzvahs, I think he thinks that would be an okay thing to do. Let's look at that article from Source 13, the Torah Mada Journal, number 16. And here the author explains the Netziv in the following words. The modern moralist accepts personal autonomy and liberty as sacrosanct, right? And that's why... slavery is so abhorrent. According to the conception of the Netziv, however, the imposition of moral standards and monotheism is far more important, since only through moral practice and monotheistic belief can any person fulfill his purpose on earth and return his soul to its divine source. Morality and monotheism accepted, really it should be accepted autonomously, may be the ideal, sure. But for a corrupt Cham and his descendants, both figuratively and literally, a regulated and merciful system of slavery is a clear second best. One who views slavery only as a social institution may certainly find it terrible, and a Bible that supports it immoral. But the Netziv, who sees slavery as a vehicle through which the pagan may participate to some degree in the covenant and commandments of Israel, justifies the sacrifice of personal liberty as worthwhile. The next source I got...
It's no different than what we do when we keep Shabbos and we don't do something on Shabbos. We keep kosher, we don't eat, treif. It's
right.
Sort of like taking away from our personal liberty,
mm-hmm.
For the Avodas Hashem. He's just... The Netziv expands that concept.
Right.
But it's very similar.
But you're doing it for yourself.
Right. So, but could you... Right.
We are Eved to Hashem. I mean,
right. Correct.
The literature and the rabbinic literature is full of
right being right. So the right being right. So I think the other actually the next yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where any of this is going. That's a plow in the Gemara used yeah. over and over again. Eved bafkeira nichole, and therefore you don't push anything on the guy, and he mm-hmm. doesn't want to do any of this kind of
right.
stuff.
Right, right. The next source I got
also
from...
Also by the cotton, we know Ger cotton might be without that based. And
right.
Dilu yicholim limchot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a clear klal also. You can take a baby, do what you want, but mm-hmm. when he becomes bar mitzvah around that, whatever, mm-hmm. he says what he wants to get around.
The next sources I got from an article by, I think his name was Rav Chaim Eisen, in a journal in the 1990s published by the OU Jewish Thought. So... and he had an article on Eliezer, Avram's slave. And so he went back to Avdus and what Cham did to Noach and Noach's declaration when he woke up. So it, he points out a few things. He says, Vayarcham avi kanan et evrat aviv. So we know the Gemara says he either castrated Noach, his father, or sodomized his father. And then it says, Vayageid lishnei achav b'chutz. And he focused, you know, he quoted people that explained Vayageid is from the Vigadat Levincha and the Haggadah, where it says, you know, b'chol amar b'ha reza meshubach. So Cham, you know, recounted in great detail. He was proud. He said it over and over what he did to his father, and so when Noah that act where a person is two things, either is so can treat his father as an object for his sexual gratification, or taking a Noah and who is actually an ish tam, you know, what is Noah ish tzaddik. He was the spiritual head of that whole generation, and by just, so violating the spiritual head, he's saying, I don't believe, Chaim is saying, I don't believe in any values, higher values, any spiritual values. It's all about, I don't believe in that. And so he wakes up, and he says, he pointed out, Arur Kanan, and Rav Hirsch is going to say this, it's not that he was cursing. I always read that, so he's cursing Kanan. Now he wants to say, he's just making a statement. This person who is so nihilistic and doesn't believe in any spiritual values is cursed, is Arur. He can't serve any higher cause or being, you know, so therefore he is by nature accursed. And therefore, he's saying, "Vihi kanan eved lamo." May he come to serve, his shame. And vihi kanan eved lamo. And may he to yefet. May he be, because through the service to a shame, he can then learn in a very concrete way through that avdus what it means to serve someone who does have higher values. And the whole point of this institution was that it should be not as a punishment, but it should be rehabilitative. It should be that he can take a person who doesn't have these values, be exposed to someone who does have these higher values, knows what avdus is, you know, avdus Hashem, to be an Eved Hashem, and he can then try to emulate them and then grow from that and then gain tremendously from that interaction. So he wants to say that Eliezer was the person and the model. Eliezer and Avram was the model that did this institution perfectly. And Eliezer totally reflected and modeled himself after Avram and was able to rise to such great spiritual heights. So he says, because you look in Source 15, it says when he went to find a wife for Yitzhak, and he's greeted by Lavan. Lavan says, "Vayoma Baba Ruch Hashem." So the Medrash says that Lavan thought Shehayasova Bo Shehu Avram, thought that he was Avram. Shehayakas Derpanav Domelo, because the face he so emulated. I mean, it's making a reference, you know, Avram, that even his face was taking on the characteristics of Avram Avinu. And Amar of Yossi Bardosa, Kanan Hu Eliezer, okay? And then it says, Yotza, and therefore it's called Baruch. Yotza Mechala Aror Lekal Baruch. So he's no longer an Aror, which he was, which Cham and his descendants, people who don't value, can't value something other, you know, higher values, but by being in this framework of Avdus and emulating, then trying, being exposed to someone who is an Eved Hashem, then he can then leave this state of being an Aror and enter the state of being a Baruch. The next source 16, also the Brachus Rabbah in Chayisar says, it mentions again, just praising Eliezer. It says, "Vayomer Avram el Avdo Zakan Beito." So it says, if you look at the next verse 17, what is it says? There were four people that were that uses the word Zakane, and they're saying that Avram Avinu Zakane veYoshev Yeshiva Haya. Avram, when he got old, was sitting and learning in yeshiva. Yitzchak Avinu Zaken v'Yoshev b'yeshiva. Yaakov Avinu Zaken v'Yoshev b'yeshiva. They quote a pasuk in each one. The Gemara is the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Chav Ches. And then the fourth thing, so Eliezer is put in with the shalom, you know, with the three avos. Eliezer, Eved Avram, Zakam Veyoshe B'Shiva Haya. And it quotes that, that, you know, the pasuk that, you know, that we were just quoting, Zagan Beto. And then the, it continues in 16 where I underline, HaMoshel B'chol Asherlo, Shalit B'Yitzaro Kimoso. You took someone who had complete chum, you know, or who was complete instinctual desire, couldn't control his Yetzer at all, and did horrific things to his father, and here it's saying Eliezer was able to control his passions and his Yetzer as much as Avram Avinu. Look how much he... And then the last source, which I didn't quote, but there's a Medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni who says that Eliezer was one of nine people who went into Gan Eden while still alive. So you see the institution, I think they were hinting at, this institution, when performed correctly, can be a very beneficial institution to take someone who doesn't have certain values and then have them model those values by being exposed to it and raise them to tremendous spiritual heights. And that's in the ideal. Rav Hirsch, in source 18, this is in Brachos Tet, Chaf Hei through Chaf Zayin, just says this this idea again, what we were just explaining. The Ein La Zchukim Vein La Atid. He says, when Noach got up, he says, Cham says, doesn't have any future. And he's saying, he's taking this Aror, is not, in the parentheses, not as a klala, but just as a hachraza. He was just stating a fact. This person who can do such an act to the Gadol Hador and to his father, and just for, or for instinctual gratification, is either just being mavaza and just, you know, rejecting anything spiritual, and is just focusing on his own, and is treating, you know, the everyone else as an object. So you can treat everyone as an object. You yourself will have to learn this idea of Abdus in a more concrete way. Se'enu mechabed kol erchin ruchanim, you know, the scham doesn't value any spiritual values, and v'nei k'nan hu aror machmat etzem tivo. So what should he do? He should then be an eved to shame, because mishem hu yilmod l'taken et chayav b'chnia l'shem, when he serves and submits himself to shame, tia gam l'k'nan hazuchut l'malei et yudo ha'eloki. He can then, by emulating and being exposed to someone like an Avram, he can then gain spiritual values and a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think while in the beginning we were saying, we saw Rav Hirsch was focused in limiting the Halachos Kanan, you can never make someone an Eved. Here, the Netziv, I think, focused maybe just on mitzvos, you know, but I think here in what we just developed again with Rav Hirsch, and Rav Dessler is going to say it again, I'll say it in Source 19, he wants to say, no, but maybe even the whole institution itself, not only from a mitzvah count, but how it should be ideally, it should expose someone who doesn't have certain values to a higher value, and that has value, and that has value when it works. So Rav Dessler, in his Michtav Me'Eliyahu 4247, says that, and quoting in the English from that article, says that Rav Dessler indicates that the institution of slavery, he's going to say the same idea, was intended to enable a small person to perfect himself by becoming a vessel for a great person. But however, he says, Rav Dessler is going to go on to say that nowadays, however, we don't have people like an Avram who can execute this correctly. So people now, if I look at the last three lines, the powerful, right now, maybe I could just read it, the original constructive relationship between slave and master changed for the worse. Now the relationship became defined less by moral superiority than not following someone. The shame is not acting like shame. You know, Avram is, you know, it's not, but their master is more just a power struggle between the powerful and the weak. And the powerful try to justify the exploitation, taking on the external trappings of moral superiority, gentility, and superficial manners. But these were just empty and awful hypocritical. So the slave master was not teaching the slave spiritual values, he was just in a position of power. So of course, if that's the what happens practically, that's not how it's supposed to work. And of course, that you know, slavery in that framework would not, you know, was not what the halacha was talking about. Rav Kook, lastly, or not lastly, but in this framework, actually also again want to say the framework was maybe beneficial, but he took it, it doesn't speak to me that much, but he was taking it in economic terms. And he was saying that in any society, even currently, we have people that have more money, people have less money, people have more money, you know, can exploit the people with less money. And he gave an example of taking a rich person who has, could take the workers and put them in a coal mine. And he wanted to say he would just, he wouldn't do anything. He just wants to get every ounce of economic benefit from his workers, and he won't, you know, that he won't be safe in the mine collapse. He doesn't care. He'll get more mine workers. He doesn't care. Keep them in the mine for 20 hours a day. I don't know. They get lung, you know, black lung, coal lung, and it's not healthy, and it's, but he, if you know, that's how it could be in terms of economic terms in society. So Rav Kook thought that the institution of Eved Knani, where the owner has an economic incentive and relationship with the worker, would be better than just having a worker with no attachment to the employer.
Socialism.
Okay, but right, but this, but so therefore, and he said, and then Rav Kook also says, you know, in a perfected world, right? So then we're not going to have first of all, economy things would be much more fair, and it'll be, you know, it's not going to have this tension, so we're not going to have that, let's say, in the Messianic era. But nowadays, he thought that it was a good institution. He was trying to justify it because it's better from an economic standpoint than what would happen, how the owners, not owners, it's better to have an owner because then he would treat them better as opposed to just having a boss who would even treat less. So you can either...
There's very little skilled labor.
Right.
So if there's no skilled labor, one person is as good as the next.
Right. Right, right.
In a right. Skilled labor.
So I said it didn't speak. It didn't speak. It didn't speak that much to me. But I just wanted to bring it down.
Better
so,
on a plantation than in a sweatshop.
They're better. Somehow not a plantation, but if on of a Jewish owner who would work them and somehow and be chayvin in that framework better than having a non-Jewish owner who would treat you would not be not an owner but just not a boss who would treat you in a coal mine for 20 hours, you know, and not care if it collapsed with your safety and collapses you. Because an owner cares about his slaves because he doesn't want a slave to die because then he loses out on money. So that was a vested interest. Okay, so, if you can take it. So therefore, just to sum up so far, again, we had, Rav Hirsch and Rav Uziel, who limited and said you can never make someone a slave. And then we started having the Netziv that maybe said, just by giving them more mitzvos, that might be beneficial. And then we got that had this whole idea again from Rav Hirsch and Rav Dessler, who's saying that being exposed to a shame, being exposed to a greater kli, you know, kli, you can take your you can then model yourself and inculcate in yourself and gain certain values that you wouldn't have had before, and that would be and perfect yourself that way, and that's beneficial. And Rav Kook said it would just be beneficial to have someone who has an economic interest in you and won't treat you so harshly. Those so far is how people in the past have dealt with it. Lastly, and the last thrust of how I want to say, give an answer is Rabbi Rabinovich.
What's your crypto when the guy gets a little too old to work, though?
Yeah, right. Right. So,
right. If you're not like interested, not worth the money you have to put into him.
Right. So Rabbi Rabinovich in the Rosh Hashiva of Ma'ale Adumim, and this is in Source 21. He has an essay. I'm writing in here. It says in the an Ada Journal 3.1. That was translated, he had it also in Hebrew, and then it was translated into English, that he said the following. He wants to say that the Torah was given to a certain people in a certain time. So just because the Torah mentions the institution of Eved Knani, it doesn't mean that the Torah is holding it up as an ideal. The Torah was... The Torah was mentioning it because it was a reality. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that it would be that was the reality of all the nations and all the economies in those days, and to then to right away tell them you can't have slaves would have gone against the human nature of what was done at that time. But he set up an institution too radical of a change. And Hashem doesn't change human nature. Hashem wants to work within human nature. But he set it up in such a way to show you that the values are that, you know, how to treat the slave and other values in the Torah, where he would then hope that society would move to a time, right, maybe based on biblical ethics and other people's influences, where the society itself will have a civil rights movement and would reject this and will come to the point, which is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted all the time, but he needed man to come to that and couldn't impose it and change the nature of man at the very beginning. So let's see how he says it. In the giving of the Torah to Israel, God recognized that this young nation was living in a world in which slavery was a normative institution. For reasons both social and economic, the Jews would have been unable at that point in history to give up the institution of slavery completely. The Bible therefore chose to regulate and improve the existing institution until the time came when humanity would grow out of it. And he quotes, like animal sacrifice, we're going to see the Rambam, slavery was permitted as an accommodation. But he says, unlike animal sacrifice, which the Rambam we're going to see says will even be in the time of Mashiach, he wants to say slavery because could disappear at a future time because there was a positive obligation to offer sacrifices, certain karbanos, but there was no positive obligation to own slaves. He was referring to the Moreh Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Lamed Bet, where the Rambam mentions karbanot as sort of an accommodation to the practices of the day. And that's how all the people worship their God, through korbanos, through animal sacrifices. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would just tell them, no animal sacrifices, just tefillah, it would just be too, he wants to say, it would be like if a Navi nowadays would say, I don't want you to do any actions, tefillah, tzedakah, ma'aseh tovah, I just want you to do thought and meditate on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's going to be your service to Hashem. It's just too far in, for us, just that would be too far in for them. So Hashem, instituted with the, and gave, certain, this is one of the reasons of karbanos, and gave them certain, the institution of karbanos, so they'll accept that, but, and put it in a base of Mikdash, in a Mishkan, but because that was the way everyone served their God, but it can evolve to a point. But again, the Rambam in source 23 said that there is going to be a underline makrivim karbanos nimos Mashiach. But Rav Novich wants to say, we see that there are certain halachas, and we see it from Eishes Yifas Torah. It's lo dibra Torah le keneged Yetzirah. It's not that there's a mitzvah and that's the ideal. You have a soldier who is, what's the number one isser in the Torah? Is lo sirtzach. Here we put them in a situation where ritzicha is commanded of them, that they're supposed to do ritzicha. So once I topple, the very thing that was the most usser thing ever, and then he's exposed to an eishes sifat Torah, it's so hard. He wants to say psychologically, someone explained to me that a person can't do that. Can't say, I'm going to be mater, the worst thing, and then you're not going to let me, and that opens a floodgate. And so in that situation, we're not saying it's great, and if a person can be Kovishes Yitro, that would even be better. It made an accommodation for that situation. So he wants to say, same here, slavery was so pervasive at the time, it wasn't something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. So it answers our question, Judaism doesn't want slavery. It loves for everyone to be free. And that, but what about the Torah institutes Eved Kanani? It instituted because that was the Torah given at that time, and we tried to modulate it in the most humane way possible, and do it like how the Rambam said in his last halacha in Hilchas Avadim. But it was waiting for human input to finally come along and to come to a stage where it would no longer be. So Similar, I don't know why I put this in, 24, he wants to say that Rav Kook wanted to say that there are, where I said with the animal sacrifices, I told you that the Rambam said there are going to be animal sacrifices. There's a line in Rav Kook where he says that Vakravosh, Yetei Az Shel Mincha Mehatso Meach Tarev Lashem Kimei Olam Uchshanim Kamanios, that we're only going to bring Korban Mincha in the time of Mashiach and not in the third base of Mikdash, and not animal sacrifices anymore. Let's just end up now. It's 10 o'clock, source 25. The same idea is based on the Talmud, Jonathan Sacks, Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, chief rabbi in England, is the was the Talmud of Rabbi Rabinovich. So how he mentioned it, he says, God changes nature, but never human nature. So God can make a miracle, right, and can change nature. But he doesn't change human nature. He doesn't go into the bechira of and change the man's nature. He doesn't want to do that.
Rabbi
he doesn't.
Sex.
We're
the Talmud of.
That's what I was told. That's what I was told.
He learned a lot of lessons from him, and he quotes him a lot.
Rabinovich was in England.
He was the head of the Jewish College.
Oh, okay. So started off in Canada. Started off in Canada. Then I think went to England, and he came to right.
Texas.
Right. So I guess when he was in England, they.
He wrote up a whole thing on sacks on how Rabinovich dealt with people who were not Shomer Shabbat.
Before he was in London.
Right. Were he to do so, if he would change human nature, if God would change human nature, then the entire project of Torah, the free worship of free human beings, would have been rendered null and void. So if God would change human nature, that goes against everything. Hashem wants us to do it with our own bechira. So therefore, God wanted mankind to abolish slavery, but by their own choice. And that takes time. Ancient economies were dependent on slavery. Slavery was such that it was not abolished until, you know, the 19th century. So the challenge of the Torah was to set up this reality, but do it in such a way and with certain values where it would help society, you know. And I don't know, people who've read Lincoln's biography, I don't know, was he very influenced by the Bible in a positive way to try to treat men, B'Tselem Elokim, and free them? Was it used? I'm not sure. Or just, you know, it helped. Other people, I think it helped.
He had a beard in the hand.
The very last one, I just wanted to, it was a source, I don't know it really if it flows, but was a letter of Kook to a person named Moshe Seidel in 1905, just like the year after he became chief rabbi, and he was answering certain of his questions, but he wanted to say that in the time of the Sanhedrin, in the Moshe Mashiach, Sanhedrin will be able to answer these ethical tensions that we have between any question we have between modern ethics and halacha, the Sanhedrin will be able to would be able to resolve it. They drush is coming back, or somehow they'll find that this was always the halacha. This was always God's will.
That in 2000, okay.